to welcome you all to this meeting. And I want you all to make sure that you've paid your $5. One of the things you get for your $5 is the agenda, but you also get to be added to our email list, which from time to time throughout the year we do send things out that you may find of interest. And so be sure that our register takers get your email address correct. Now, turn your cell phones off, if you would. Part of the flight thing. We don't want you to mess with navigation.
Is this meeting being recorded?
Yes, this meeting is being recorded. And it's going to be made, the digital files can be made available to those of you who gave us your email address if you want them. Now, as is customary in the National Federation of the Blind, we sometimes have issues which some people regard as controversial. I don't understand why, but sometimes they do. Or sometimes we have presenters with whom we don't agree. Sometimes that happens and sometimes that doesn't. As is usually the case with the National Federation of the Blind, we may disagree with presenters. We may disagree with them profoundly or a little, but however it is that we feel about what they say, one of the things that we always do is we refrain from personal attacks and we conduct ourselves in a courteous and civilized fashion. This is what I'm hoping we will do today. Not that I'm thinking we're going to talk about anything that's all that controversial, but in case we do. I am moderating this meeting, and as the moderator, I will be moderating throughout the whole meeting, even while the presenters are presenting. Therefore, if you want the floor to speak, to ask a question, I'm just letting the presenters know this too, because this is something different. I don't care if Rob or Sinclair from Microsoft here sees your hand, or if Rich Schwartzberger sees your hand. You're not going to talk because I didn't see your hand. I want you to say your name, and if you say your name, then I'll know who you are. You don't have to say my name because I know who I am, and I will deal with the ones that I get to hear first when the time comes for questions. Other than that, I think what you'll see here is that we have a pretty full agenda, a very full agenda, and I'm hoping that we'll make this by 5 o'clock. My goal is to be done and out of here by then, but I've not done so well in the past. All right. The first item on the agenda is the work of accessibility at Microsoft is alive and well. To present this item is Rob Sinclair, who is the director of the Accessible Technology Group at Microsoft. As director of the Accessible Technology Group, which is affectionately known as ATG at Microsoft, Rob Sinclair is responsible for the company's worldwide accessibility strategy to develop software and devices that make it easier for people to see, hear, and use their computers. Sinclair and his team are responsible for all product planning, engineering, documentation, industry collaboration, government affairs, and marketing related to accessible technology at Microsoft. The group provides the expertise Microsoft needs to create technology that is more accessible and makes Windows an outstanding platform that other companies can use to develop accessible products. Sinclair is one of the chief architects of Microsoft User Interface, UI, automation, Microsoft's innovative cross-platform accessibility model. He also has 15 patents pending. We'll have to talk about that. Most for advances in accessible technology. While Sinclair's team focuses on helping Microsoft and partner companies create technology that empowers individuals with disabilities and other difficulties, the benefits of those solutions are not limited to those who experience physical or cognitive impairments, and neither is his vision for accessible technology. Quote, today people are required to adapt themselves to their computers, so using technology means knowing how the machine expects us to give it information and how we can get information from the machine. How often have I heard that one? Sinclair says. It's an artificial barrier that prevents us from making the best use of technology. I want to create a system that adapts to the individual so that it becomes much easier and more natural for people to interact with technology. By addressing the needs of people with a wide range of disabilities, we also create a system that is more functional for everyone. Sinclair joined Microsoft in 1997 as a developer support engineer in the Premier Support Group, where he provided technical and business support for some of the company's largest customers. In 1998, he transitioned to the Accessible Technology Group as a program manager. Over the next 5 years, he held a variety of roles in ATG, eventually becoming group manager in charge of development, testing, and program management. A talented nature and wildlife photographer. I don't know. Sinclair left ATG in 2004 to join Microsoft's Digital Photography Group, where he got to take pictures all the time, a job that allowed him to combine his personal love of photography with his professional passion for technology. A year later, an opportunity arose to return to ATG as a director, and that's what he's doing right now. By the way, you might be interested to know that Rob is a native of Irving, Texas, and he earned his bachelor's and master's degree in computer science from New Mexico State University, and he focused on software usability and user-centered design. While still in graduate school, he founded a successful software consulting company that helped businesses synchronize their time flow and technology. Oh, it's workflow, not time flow. Later, he worked in a variety of roles in the software industry, including graphic design, development, testing, documentation, training, and public relations. So, let me say personally about Rob, he's a pretty good guy. I guess that's the long and short of it. I've had a chance to meet with him on a couple of occasions. Some of us had breakfast with him this morning, and I think what you're going to find is here's a guy that really is trying to do the right thing. And he's a plain-spoken fellow, easy to understand, and so he's going to tell us what Microsoft is doing now on the accessibility front. Please give a very warm welcome to Rob Sinclair.
Wow, that was a pretty amazing intro there. Wow. I'll send the check to you later.
Okay, right? No problem.
I don't know who wrote that, but that was, wow. I didn't know some of those things about myself, so that's interesting. great.
I thought the photography thing was kind of appropriate at blind convention.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I still don't have any Braille photos. Now that would be, see, that's what we need to get to. All right, well, I apologize for all the talk about me. I'm really not here to talk about me. I'm here about a few different things. By the way, these notes will be made available electronically. I'll send those to Curtis later today so he can distribute those at will. There are really, I guess, four or five things I really wanted to talk about. One is just a quick overview of our approach to building accessible software at Microsoft and some of the lessons we've learned since XP, some of the things we tried there, and some of the improvements we've made as we've moved past Windows XP. I guess how we work with the AT vendor community and in general with the community, some of the specific changes that are coming in Vista, and then I want to give you a demonstration of Vista with a third-party screen reader application running today just to show that it's not smoke and mirrors. The results of this work have actually produced some good results that we're very proud of with the vendors we've been working with. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about next steps and kind of how I see things today. So if that's agreeable, let's go ahead and do that. Is there anything big that I didn't list that you're really just dying to hear about? No? More about me and my past, I guess? Yeah, I bet. Well, great. So let's talk about XP. Really, the way we approach Windows XP and accessibility is we considered ourselves to be the representative of the community and the AT vendor community. And so we then, in turn, worked across Microsoft to explain the requirements and the needs of people with disabilities, covering specific requirements, as we say, driving specific work items into different product groups. But it was mostly internally focused. We would have conferences, you know, we would attend conferences and have focus groups, and a lot of sessions like this we would attend and really ask, you know, what people were struggling with, what they would really like us to see fixed, or what they would like us to fix, et cetera. And so our primary goal there was to make sure we had an AT product in every major category running by the time we shipped Windows XP. And we even had a one-week porting lab, brought those AT vendors onto campus, and it allowed them to work in our porting lab that all companies use when they come to Microsoft to port their code. They have direct access to the development teams across the company. My team is there to really help them and support them along the way. So that was our, I think that was the first formally organized assistive technology porting lab we had at Microsoft for Windows. And so, you know, we had some success. Six out of those eight categories were represented by AT products, but those products were not available when XP launched. And we attributed that primarily to the fact that we waited so long, and we waited for the platform to stabilize enough so the AT vendors could come and actually, you know, work on a stable platform. The catch is, of course, you know, that as you wait, the longer you wait, the less influence, you know, those developers can have on the product. And so what we really did post Vista is we said, look, we have this great assistive technology vendor program, which we, by the way, really kicked off about 5 years ago, so around the time we launched XP. And we said, okay, so now we have this large number of assistive technology vendors in our program. We have these... All right, the rowdy crew is coming. liven it up a little. That's right. And so that's really how we focus things differently after Vista. We said, look, let's take a look at these vendors we have, this community that we're starting to build, and really understand how do we leverage that better, get them involved. And so what that means is we pretty quickly after Vista, we had a meeting held at in conjunction with CSUN. We had a large conference room. We invited all of the assistive technology vendors. Many mainstream ISVs, IBM was there. I think Sun might have even been there. And we really sat down and said, look, here's some slides, some PowerPoint slides that talk about this new accessibility model we have in mind, some of our guiding principles for the design efforts, and let's talk about what we want to achieve and what the vendors in the room really needed us to achieve to help them better build better software. So that was our early design preview for what later became UI automation. And so we took that feedback, we came back, we started the design work. We also created this benefit for members of the AT vendor program. We provided a premier support contract, which is something that's very expensive typically to purchase. Mainstream application development companies purchase those, you know, IBM, HP, SAP, those kinds of companies typically have these support contracts. It's not something an AT vendor would typically purchase, primarily because of the cost. And so one of the benefits of the Microsoft Assistive Technology Vendor Program is we provide that support for them. We ensure they have access to all the Microsoft Developer Network materials. And so really trying to make sure everything that we have at Microsoft is in the hands of the AT vendors. And so we really started increasing that collaboration with that early design review. It was all slideware, if you're familiar with that term, meaning it's just a bunch of PowerPoint decks. We really hadn't done a lot of in-depth specifications at that point. And so really our goals were to create an accessibility model that enabled AT vendors to create better applications and actually spend less time worrying about gathering data and more time working on the user experience. So that is the founding, one of the founding principles of UI automation and the goal. And so, you know, with that, we really started moving into what was then called Longhorn planning. We sent out a survey to all the AT vendors in that program and said, if you could tell us which techniques you're most dependent on that are most likely to break, then we can keep an eye out as the design progresses and try to help proactively identify those. We got pretty good feedback from that, and that feedback has really trickled in over the last 3 years. And so that really gave us some areas to focus with. Often, you know, you wouldn't be surprised to hear that screen readers and screen magnifiers, most of those fall into the area of the graphics stack or the way applications render information and the way we exchange information across products or across processes, as we say. And so, you know, we took that list. We still have that list. We're maintaining it today. We really try to keep track of it. But Longhorn has been a pretty wild and fun ride. So being from Texas, you know, I think it's well named as a Longhorn because I think it's been a rodeo the whole way. And so, yeah, yeehaw! And so then moving to 2003, that's when we really had our second design preview for UI automation. And this time we had it on campus in Redmond. We hired Jeffrey Richter, who's a well-known author for Microsoft development in general. If you swing around to your left there, I think there you go. And so Jeffrey Richter came out to campus. I think it was either a week or a week-long event where the first 2 days were dedicated to informing and teaching. It was a two-day training class for AT vendors to actually learn how to write managed code. And so as they wrote, they took these classes. We actually taught them. Is that me? My battery just died, actually.
Whoa.
So I'm just going to plug this on the wall right
now. Actually, I don't know where a plug is.
It's going to be hard to do my demo if I don't have electricity. So excuse me for just a second. Yeah, nice try.
That's not a bug, that's a feature.
Here we go.
We do have power.
It's the most accessible platform. It doesn't even require electricity. Very impressive.
You just have to think.
That's what we call bridging technology. Okay. So solar powered everything. Sorry for the interruption there. Okay, great. Good. We're back up and running. Yeah, that's right. So we brought the AT vendors out because I don't know if you recall, you may not have been aware, but at the time, Longhorn was going to be a major shift in the way Windows applications were built. The platform, the operating system itself, and the message to application developers was build your application using managed code, .NET, you know, all those terms might ring a bell. So that was really the push at the time. And so we therefore designed UI automation to be a managed accessibility API that would fit in with that world. So that's why we provided the training to the AT vendors to make sure they were familiar with managed code. They had a chance to learn from one of the best instructors in the world. And so that was the beginning of the kickoff. The rest of the week, they immediately got to apply those skills. They wrote code against an alpha version of UI automation, reviewed the specifications, looked at the tools and the online help we had at the time, and gave us a lot of feedback. And it was you know, good, raw feedback saying, wow, this doesn't work, the performance isn't good, we really need to see the structure of applications in a different way. And they gave us a lot of other feedback that was, wow, I wish it could do, you know, X or Y or Z, not very specific ideas. So we went back to the drawing table, we redesigned huge components of UI automation. We added some capabilities around quickly searching the application and the trees to find the information you need, to filter the tree to only see what the application is interested in. Because a screen reader or a magnifier or an on-screen keyboard, for example, really want typically very different kinds of information about the UI. And so those vendors said, wow, I'd really like to be able to get a customized view for my application and my domain expertise, or my domain, to really focus on how I build my application. So that's why we provided filtering capabilities. We also did a lot of work around performance and really exploring more of this model of exposing the behavior of the application as opposed to wrapping everything around the class name. And the primary goal there is that if you write an assistive technology, like a screen reader, for example, based on the behavior of an element, whether I call my button, you know, a thunder button or a push button or a superior Rob push button, it doesn't matter. In the end, it really does one primary thing. You push it, you click it, you press space bar, you somehow invoke that control, and it launches some action or it completes something. So similarly, a menu, a tree item, combo boxes, those all have some similar behaviors, and really opening and closing or expanding and collapsing is one of the common behaviors that all of those controls exhibit. And so the reason we did this is we looked across, as we were designing U-Automation, at the huge, I guess you say, population of controls and elements that are used to build applications today. There are thousands of controls. Many of them duplicate very, very similar behavior. So we said, look, if we factor this a different way and just factor it based on behavior, what do we get? We ended up finding 21 core behaviors that all those controls exhibited. So by factoring those into, you know, equivalence classes, then you can recombine those in arbitrary ways to represent any kind of control. So that combo box, for example, supports things like open or expand collapse, selection, and when it's open and has a list with scrolling, it supports scroll. So similarly, a menu supports expand collapse, but it doesn't support scrolling. Well, I guess some menus do today, right? And so the idea was, by redefining the way we look at UI into these behaviors, we believe there is a much reduced cost for assistive technology vendors to build a screen reader or some kind of assistive technology that consumes that information and conveys it to a customer. That's the theory. We're still waiting for validation of that. Internally, we have also been seeing a lot of adoption from the test community. We also designed this model to be an automated testing model so that we would get more mainstream appeal and therefore more adoption, which of course benefits the assistive technology vendor because they have broader adoption in the community, which then of course benefits the community in the end, which is the real goal. And so that was a long way of saying that U-Automation was really designed to change the way application information is exposed to an assistive technology. We started the design work in 2000 with a preliminary really conference like this, style discussion of what was needed. We followed it up in 2003 with this on-site alpha, you know, testing where they played with the code, they started writing managed code, they looked at the specifications, and basically shredded it and gave us a lot of good information and good work to go forward. And so then in 2004 came the architectural shift in Longhorn, which also coincided with the change to the name Vista. And that's where we said, look, managed code isn't really quite there. We've gotten a lot of feedback, we had in those first 3 years from the community, and this is the broader developer community saying, wow, you know, asking me to go and rewrite my entire application to be managed is a pretty insane request. And so, you know, it sounds good within the walls of Redmond and Microsoft, but, you know, I think we got a lot of very clear feedback saying we're not ready for that. And so the development community really wanted a more gradual progression. And so Microsoft stepped back and said, okay, we're going to reapproach Longhorn. We're going to also get cut some of the other features for, you know, Longhorn that were tending the schedule to increase. And so that's when we rescoped Longhorn into Vista and said, okay, so now unmanaged code is still the norm. If people want to write to managed code, fantastic. We've got a lot of great investments in .NET 3.0. U-Automation, we had this complete managed model. So my team said, okay, good. Now we get to go rewrite the same thing in unmanaged code. So we spent a great deal of time actually going and reworking a lot of that, re-implementing in native code so that we would get, obviously, so that we would match the rest of the development model. And so we've gotten about two-thirds of that done for this release. We're still working on the client side of the AT vendor piece of that. But the other thing that was key in that change in the architectural shift is, although some things were like the Windows file system, that was actually pulled out of the Vista release and decoupled with that. However, we still said, look, there are going to be major changes in the graphics stack, the driver model, the UI framework, the window manager, and the security model. And we went back to that list from the survey from AT vendors, looked down it and said, okay, we still have plenty of work to do. So, because it's pretty clear that those things all impact assistive technologies and the way they're built, especially screen readers and screen magnifiers that rely on an off-screen model. And so 2005 rolls around. That's when I came back to the group from the photography effort at Microsoft. I took a look at the state of the product, and we said, okay, we really need to We've been collaborating more with the community and having, you know, design reviews, but pretty infrequent touch, maybe every 6 months, you know, maybe every year. So there were pretty big blocks of time in between where we would be working on the feedback we had received. So in 2005, last summer, we actually shifted our approach. We actually brought a handful of assistive technology vendors on campus for a little more than a week. And these were selected according to their requirements and their technologies, the way their applications are built, to form a representative set of assistive technologies that would be most challenged, shall we say, by the architectural changes in Vista. And so what we did for that week is we set those developers from the assistive technology vendor companies down in a room, a series of rooms, with the architects from Microsoft for the graphics stack, the window manager, the driver model, all those things I mentioned. And they had these very deep and open discussions about what we were thinking of doing, and, you know, showed them internal design documents. They explained why that wouldn't work for them or what would work. They gave us suggestions, and we really worked very closely together to come up with a proposal by the end of that week to say, okay, there were these, you know, major gaps when you arrived in the kind of support we were going to be able to deliver and what you needed. By the time they left, we had very clear guidance. We had several of the problems we believed designed on paper that would work, and then a lot of follow-up items. And so we then had very regular conversations at least once a week for several months. Oftentimes, it was on an as-needed basis, so oftentimes, every other day, you know, one of those architects would be calling a specific vendor saying, look, here's the piece I'm working on now. You know, our idea from last week really isn't panning out because of X, Y, and Z. So this, we created this very, very close cooperation with these representative vendors, and that has really carried through until today. We also arranged for those vendors to receive private, or what we call a daily builds of Windows Vista, meaning they get an internal drop of the latest and greatest bits so that they can install them on their machine and experience the same fun and pain that we experience internally. And so, but really, I mean, it's a significant difference because they didn't have to wait for some major release or some major milestone. We were sending them the drops as soon as we had them. So as soon as we believed we had addressed a problem that was facing them, we would send them the new binaries, they would install them and give us immediate feedback. And this has really allowed very, very rapid progress in the last year. And so I think it's fundamentally changed the way we've been building Vista with the vendors in general.
The CTP, that's what you're talking about.
Client technology previews were released every month or every 2 months. We were able to actually drop them interim builds between CTPs. Oftentimes they would get a new build every week. I don't think they ever receive them on a daily basis just because of the reality of building. I mean, it takes 24 hours to compile a version of Windows.
That's
a lot of
Windows.
You know, and so but it's very rapid. And so it was actually really nice. Let's see if I've missed anything here. And so then the other thing we did, so that really happened last summer. We started that. We started having monthly conference calls with the entire, all the members of the AT vendor program. So the entire membership could actually hear what was happening, what progress we were making, which issues we were finding, and then really also ask questions as they got those CTPs, as Joe just mentioned. They were able to pick up the client technology previews, install them on their own machines, and see if their products were working with them. And if not, we had this established monthly call, so they definitely had time from us once a month, but they're always, of course, you know, sending us email, contacting that premier support person. So I think it's really helped quite a bit. Then in January of this year, we scheduled a Vista Porting Lab, a two-week-long event, and this is prior to Beta 2 call. So our goal was to bring out 30 vendors. Well, I think we invited more, but we had 30 actually attend. They had access to all the development teams at Microsoft that they needed. Our goal was by the time they left, for all of them to have either a product up and running on Vista or to at least have a clear plan of action for getting there, understanding more of the issues, and having a better connection with the development teams. Happy to report half of them, maybe I think it was slightly over half, really did leave with the product running, which was pretty phenomenal since we hadn't even made it to Beta 2. And recall back in XP, It was after beta 2 that we had the one-week porting lab and discovered, wow, there's some significant issues here. Oh, but it's kind of too late. And so, you know, so they had builds basically starting last fall is when they really started getting regular builds. Then we had the porting lab in January. And I think now we are still seeing a lot of issues pop up, especially with the security model. I'm sure you're reading the blog, seeing the reports.
UAC.
Yeah, user access control, our best friend. We all love it. At least we hope so, because you're going to see it a lot. I don't mean to sound like this is a rosy story. I think it's a phenomenal difference in how we've approached it. I think the results, really, you'll see the results as I'm able to actually show a third-party screen reader running on Vista today. Pretty phenomenal. This is one of the products that in January actually was running by the time I left the lab. Internal testers and internal employees have actually offered to be on some of the alpha and beta programs for these vendors' products. So as they get a new version of their product up and running, they send it in to one of the people on my team. He distributes it to this network internally. So any employee at Microsoft who's interested in trying the latest alpha version or beta version of, you know, X product has a way to get that. So we're really trying to merge the vendors' beta and alpha programs with our own internal processes a little better. We've got a long way to go, but I think we've made some good progress there. And so quickly I wanted to touch on some of the results that all this has really achieved. We've introduced a new magnification API or a magnification API into the Windows stack, the graphics stack, which is new. It's built on the, if you are familiar with the jargon, it's the media integration layer, part of Vista. If there's an application that's using vector-based UI, for example, the new Windows client platform that used to be codenamed Avalon, if you have an application that's built using vector-based UI and you use a magnifier on that application that's using this magnification API, all those primitives are re-rendered natively. And so at the new resolution, which means you have no jaggies, it's perfectly smooth, it's absolutely gorgeous. So that's pretty impressive. Now, I mean, I have to make sure I'm clear here. This isn't everything in Vista. It means it's any vector-based UI and any applications built using that new Windows client platform, which also, by the way, happens to support UAutomation. Little plug there. subtle.
Aeroglass, is that what you're shooting for here?
No, this is the new Avalon. So if anyone saw the or heard about the, I'm not sure how widely available it was to see, but I know there was a splash about the New York Times building a new reader or a new viewer on this new WCP platform. So, for example, if you run a magnifier across that using this magnification API, everything will be re-rendered at the correct resolution. So it can be a 10x and you're getting no jaggy. So it's pretty impressive. The other thing we added was a new mirror driver model for Vista. That magnification API I talked about is great when it's available. There are some video modes where it's not available. Like I said, there are also a lot of application frameworks where it's not available it's available, but it's going to just do basic stretching because it's not vector-based. So we do still have a fallback for vendors who have very advanced algorithms and a large set of heuristics and techniques they've built up. Zoom text comes to mind. So they still have a way of getting the information through a mirror driver that they need to make sure their product doesn't regress for Vista. Just one example, by the way, of course. You know, same applies to, you know, Magic and anyone else who has a screen magnifier. We're still working with the security team, as we alluded to a minute ago. But one of the things we have achieved is we've made sure there's a way that when you switch desktops, for example, that part of that security model, if you haven't heard about it, anytime you do something that could be deemed as damaging to your computer, the system says, hey, are you doing this, or effectively is there a virus on your machine doing this, or some kind of malware? So you, in some situations, are prompted. Well, in order to prevent someone from faking that prompt or, you know, automatically dismissing it for you, it switches to the secure desktop, and that UI is actually displayed on a different desktop than you're using. So the catch is when you switch to desktop today, your AT doesn't follow you automatically. And so we've had to do work there to make sure if you're using a screen reader or a magnifier, when it switches, that's going to be magnified and spoken. So, and then, of course, the other big result is UAutomation, which is our new accessibility model. Succeeds MSAA. It's still backward compatible with MSAA. There's a lot of ways it can plug in to provide a nice migration path. So I don't want to spend a lot of time there because I'm sort of running short on time. But I can talk about UAutomation all day. So where are we today? That all sounds good. Sounds like we're making good progress. But so what does that mean? I mean, how far are we, right? Well, we still have a lot to do. We're still working with the vendors to find issues and resolve them. Still getting email on a regular basis of things they're finding. So we're putting them in contact with those good teams. This is where that new engagement model is really paying off, because we're seeing the ability to, first of all, we're getting much better feedback from the vendors that are actually working on Vista today, meaning that are already working to get their products running on Vista. I've already named the examples. There's security, there's installation issues, there's changes in the structure and the UI menus. I think Joe's going to talk a little bit about that later. Obviously my team also has the charter. I mean, if you pick that little piece out of the long, beautiful intro Curtis gave, was that we're also responsible for being the accessibility subject matter experts at Microsoft, and really consulting with the other teams that are building products to make sure they understand how to make them accessible. So we're doing a lot of work with those teams as well. And, of course, we continue those conference calls with the vendors. So that's all fine and dandy, but for all you know, nothing's really working, right? Well, so let's prove it. So I have a laptop here running. It's not one of the latest Vista builds. It's also not the Beta 2 build. It's about a week and a half old. So I also have... Well, I'm just going to go ahead and start the demo here. So I'm on the login desktop. So this is when your machine first boots. This is the desktop you come up to. Anyone ever use Windows Key plus U to start Utility Manager on XP?
All the time.
Anyone?
Yeah.
Anyone? Great. So today, one of the things I'm not really talking about today, there's a lot of other work we've done in Vista. I'm really just talking about the pieces that I think are probably most interesting to you. In XP, we have a utility manager that helped launch assistive technologies, especially those built into the box. We had an accessibility control panel, which helped you find common, settings across the platform that might be interesting to people. And then we had the accessibility wizard, which walked you through step-by-step a lot of different categories of settings. Based on a lot of user feedback and usability, we've basically done away with all of those and created something new we call the Ease of Access Center, which is really focused on connecting the customer with the right settings in the system. And so I'm not going to really talk about it. We think it's a really good direction to head for the future. Vista is kind of the first incarnation of that, so it's the first step. It's certainly not done. But when you press Windows Key plus U now, we want to make sure we're preserving that investment of learning where people have learned that keystroke. So today, I walk up to this machine. I don't know what state it's in. I just told you it's in the secure desktop, though. So I press Windows Key plus U.
Make your computer easier to use. Windows will read and scan this list automatically. Press the space bar to select the highlighted option.
So I'm going to just close this very quickly here, because it's going to go into scanning mode, and it's going to...
text on screen. Read aloud, narrator.
Okay, so...
Louis Moore?
Yes.
Okay, often in the narrator now, when JAWS crashes quite frequently, it wants you to send a report to Microsoft, but it won't tell you which button it's on, cancel.
Okay.
And narrator will not, for the most part, especially when it gets in trouble, tell you what button it's on.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to hold that question for just a minute, because... It's a great question, but I'm actually not even demonstrating the narrator yet. This is actually self-voicing support we built into the Ease of Access Center. So it's self-voicing and self-scanning. So when I press Windows Key plus U,
make your computer
that application. I'm going to just turn this down. The application actually just started. It comes up and it starts speaking right away because. And there are several scenarios where it could be narrator crashed, it could be JAWS crashed, it could be something is just wrong. And so we want to make sure that this application has the ability to be as accessible as possible, which is why it has the auto scanning, auto speaking support. And so what I'm going to do then is, I should also mention that there's an ease of access icon right here on the secure desktop, so that people who are sighted can actually discover this utility more easily now. It's also very important for someone who can't actually press Win key plus U. Right? Correct. So I'm going to actually do this one more time and go ahead and then launch Narrator from this.
Make your computer easier to use. Hear text. Make items on the hear text on screen. Read aloud Narrator.
Okay, so I've checked the next box. I've checked I've selected the checkbox for Narrator.
Windows log on pane.
So now Narrator's reading.
Windows log on pane. Press Control plus Alt plus Delete to log on. Ease of access button. Windows minimize Microsoft Narrator.
Okay, so there I gave you a quick overview of the secure desktop. You'll also notice this is a new speech engine. This is the new Anna voice that we have in Windows. It's available in English and Chinese. You'll also notice there are still some pronunciation issues. Absolutely. So if you're expecting a perfect voice, I'll tell you right now, you're not going to get it. We've been doing a lot of work with the speech team on this. They've received quite a bit of feedback. They understand that there are issues to address here. So for some people, we think this is great. It's really going to come down to personal preference, whether you think it's good for you or not. I personally am still logging bugs on things that irritate me as I use it. So feel free to do that as a beta tester. More feedback, the better, right? So I'm going to go ahead and log in very quickly so I can move on. So we're transitioning now to the login desktop. So what I want to show you now is I want to... I'm going to turn that down for a minute. What's that?
Same music.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, consistency, right?
Right.
That's right. All about consistency.
That's why they call it Windows default.
That's right. Everything that's the same, we do for consistency. Everything that's different, we do it because it's better. That's right. That's the way we do it. So I talked a little bit about ease of access. I'm not going to spend more time there. Of course, the Ease of Access Center, when you launch it on the secure desktop, you have a very small set of items. It's really intended just to get the kind of assistive technologies or settings up and running that you need just to get logged in. Once you're on the secure desktop, if you press the same key sequence, Win key plus U, you get a fuller experience for ease of access, which has a questionnaire, which allows you, in terms of your daily experience, to talk about, you know, I actually can't read the newspaper, or, you know, I can't see the faces on the TV screen. So using day-to-day terminology, you can indicate some kind of, you know, preferences that you have for the system, and then we, at the end, present a recommended set of features that might be relevant for you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and launch this here, so you can...
Click administrative settings.
And of course, I've already jumped ahead of my demo. because this darn third-party screen reader is working too well. It's already up and running. So I was going to actually launch WindowEyes here at this part of the presentation, but it's already up and running. So. So here I'm just tabbing through the Ease of Access Center. This basically demonstrates basic accessibility for WindowEyes. It's working today in Vista. So I could tab through the whole UI, but it's not very interesting. I think there's some other pieces of UI that might be more interesting. You've probably heard some talk about the start menu. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to hit the start button again.
Start box attention. Start menu. Edit box. Start search.
So you notice it's in the edit box. So this is just a quick tip for you. The first thing you hit in the start menu now is the search field. And so you either press the up arrow or the down arrow to get into what you consider the normal menus.
Tab works too.
Tab, yeah, anything. So, but it's very confusing the first time you go in there and you press, you know, C for control panel.
And you don't get it.
But I think you're searching for something called C, so immediately the menu changes to show you everything that starts with a C. So it's great in some cases if you know what it's doing and you want it to do that. What I really wanted to show here is although the start menu is very different, WindowEyes and Narrator are already supporting it, so you can navigate the UI. If you know that one trick, the fact that you're starting in the search field.
Welcome Center. Browse and clear. Documents. Pictures. Music.
Right, so it's the same things you're kind of familiar with. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to actually go into, let's see here.
Media Center. A, all programs. Default programs. Internet Explorer.
So I'm going to go down to
Windows Media Player.
So Windows Media Player.
Windows Media Player. 11.23. Step 2. Preview. Windows Media Player.
Okay, so we're in the Windows Media Player.
Now play menu.
So we can go through all the menus. I'm not going to bore you with all those.
Sign into service.
In case you don't know, there's the Urge Music Service. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over to the tree here.
Context menu. Music tab. Menu closed. Layout. Context menu.
Okay.
I'll do that.
See, I'm in the search field again.
Yeah.
So.
Add device. Add device. Layout options. Present. Layout options. Add device.
Oh, that's why. Sorry.
Genre. Five.
So I'm in the genre.
World. Seven. OM apostrophe S blues. Quiet songs. 11. Disperter. Age to
do. So, play a little music. Sleepy time, isn't that pleasant? So it's really great for a demo. This is going to get you all fired up, right? The reason I chose this is so that you can hear a little bit over this.
Turn it on. Stop. Previous. Pause. Musical.
So, of course, I really just am showing here that the kind of support we have in Vista today is relatively good. I mean, it's really starting to progress. We've got the start menu. We've got the login desktop is working pretty well. We've got music player. Unfortunately, I did not think through the fact that I don't have an internet connection here, so I can't demonstrate IE because I forgot to sync. I also forgot last night to sync content, so I apologize. So I'm not going to demo IE. So that's really kind of a quick picture to show you. You know, we have third-party ATs up and running today. We have a good ease of access center, which we think has some nice features to help people when you first get into your machine. If it doesn't have a screen reader on it and you need to get Narrator running, we think it's a nicer experience to get that running. And then you can, of course, navigate to install if you don't have a self-voicing install for your AT. So just a couple more slides, and then I was just going to open up to Q&A. So really, where does that leave us today? We have another, 2, maybe 3 months at best to really, until we consider Vista done, right? Because we're in the final stages. If you don't know, if you haven't heard about the Microsoft development cycle or aren't familiar with large development projects, although our release to manufacturing date is October 25th, that really doesn't mean we get to make changes up until October 24th. I mean, it's really, by the time we get into the end of July or August, it's really becoming difficult to make changes in the product. You have to stabilize the code, really get it going. And so if you do have an opportunity to beta test the product today, there are ATs that are available today, either in alpha form or beta form. I'd encourage you to do that. We'd love the feedback. Joe is actually going to cover some nice changes, or he's going to do a nice job later of covering some of the changes in the UI. Experience and how those are going to create challenges. One of the things my team is doing, which Joe, I don't think we've talked about yet, is we're actually going to be producing a guide for users specifically of screen readers and likely of magnifiers to help give them some tips and hints around how to navigate the UI. Great, excellent. And so, the one I just gave you, look, when you hit the start menu, this is where you're starting off. Like, that's a great tip. If you just know that, it's really helpful. So, we're going to try to help provide some guidance and some clarification around what has changed, how to navigate it effectively. We think that will help. We've been getting really good engagement from the AT vendor community. They've been doing a nice job of really working with us to get these products going, get their products going, help us find issues in Vista in general. Same applies to Office. So, we actually feel pretty positive about the direction we're going here. And what's next? Well, really, I'm one of those guys who's sort of never satisfied. So this is great. It's phenomenally better than XP because I have no doubt that we're going to have assistive technologies ready the day that Vista ships. we will, I have no doubt, we'll have assistive technologies available in all the major categories, if not all categories. Screen readers and magnifiers are typically the most difficult, so the fact that we have those up and running today is extremely exciting. But really, we're still looking as we move forward to find a way to how do we close the technical gaps, how do we reduce the cost of building an accessible application for a software developer, and how do we then help the AT vendors move past the point of spending all their time gathering information and really help them move on to the area of really understanding how to create, or having time to spend creating a more compelling user experience, find new ways of taking that information that they can get more easily, and really doing something interesting with it. And so that's really the meta goal that we're going for. And one of the reasons I was really excited to come back and run the group for Microsoft is, you know, that's really what I want to do. I think somewhere, I guess maybe that was this morning at breakfast, we were talking about, you know, there's some key things here. Some of those are filling technology gaps that exist today. We can directly affect that by working with the vendors in the community. How to really get more uptake for UI automation and other technologies like that that will reduce the cost and improve the experience for customers. And then how to actually get better assistance for Vista and better coordination across Microsoft products. You know, that's directly something that I own for the company. Understanding how do we at Microsoft do a better job of getting really good coordination and consistent experiences across, you know, Internet Explorer and Office and Windows and MSN and all those products we own. So, you know, kind of the summary for me is I'm always looking for a better way, always looking to do more, which exhausts my team sometimes because, you know, I really like to see us pushing the bar. So we're not there, certainly not going to be a perfect product by any means, but I feel like we're definitely turning in the right direction. I know we've benefited a great deal from the feedback from this community, you know, especially the membership here of NFB. I know Curtis and Ann have been tremendously helpful for us in the beta testing they've been doing for us. Then, of course, the great, you know, interaction we're getting from the vendors and, you know, people like IBM who gave us significant feedback. Going back to that design preview, those first two design reviews, IBM was one of the key contributors there on feedback to what worked well in the past in the models they've designed, what didn't work well. So I think we've gotten a lot of benefit out of having not just AT vendors in the program, but having companies like IBM who have a great deal of experience building not only assistive technologies, but also accessibility products, building you know, core components of platforms for other companies sometimes, and, you know, and applications themselves. So I feel like we're starting to get some good energy around a community of technologists. And so, you know, I'm just kind of asking for feedback from you as a consumer as well. If you have time to beta test Vista or any of our products, especially using some of these alpha assistive technologies or beta versions, I'd love that kind of feedback. And so that's it for me. I actually caught up somewhat.
You did good. Any kind of...
So what questions do you have that are not answered? Did I?
No. Lewis Morgan.
Lewis, yes.
I forgot what you call it, Web 2, where you can change part of the web page without telling the rest of the web page that you did it.
Yes.
I know your 7 release, Internet Explorer 7 is not being supported. And I think Charles may be trying to. Do you have any feeling about that?
Well, I don't know. Rich, you're going to be talking about some of that. Do you want to? Because you're up next, I think, right?
We're going to be talking about, Becky's going to actually show you some of that, and there's some new standard work going on in this space,
yep.
So you'll be able to find out that information.
Well, I suppose the question to be more specific, since I know Rich is going to talk about it, I guess I would follow up by saying, what is Microsoft doing to address that particular issue, since, you know, when you hear something like IE7 doesn't support it, so then you get
right.
to wonder, well, what's going on? So can you just give us a little, I mean, I'm not saying you want to do a whole talk on it, but tell us,
no, that's fine.
You're on the WCAG, you're doing some other stuff. Tell
so, and doing. Just to make sure, so, Lewis, I think you're referring specifically to the DHTML accessibility roadmap.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I want to make sure. So IE7 has not currently committed to implement that for this release. Sorry, the IE team has not committed to support that for the 7 release, and that's primarily due to the fact that it's locked down at this point. So the fact that they've not committed to do that and the product is effectively locked down means it will not be in 7. That's a very safe assumption. The thing we are doing is the MSN team has been involved in the WCAG 2.0 work for, I think it's 4 or 5 years, and the IE team has recently planned, has decided to actually put someone in the, it's at the protocol and formats working group. So they actually just recently said, look, we do need to get involved here and we want to contribute. So they've actually committed to have someone join that working group to really start to get engaged there, which is great news for me, for my charter, for the company. So I think we'll start to see a lot more engagement from IE there. I know IBM has been hoping for more. We've been talking about that for a year. So, but I think it's at least good that we're getting engaged now. So what form that will take, I don't really know. But does that answer your question? So yes, you're right. 7, no support. There are alternative forms that some of the information can still be made accessible. So it doesn't mean that those applications are completely inaccessible. But you know, just to make sure that's clear as well.
And you have to play with the options too, because of quick tabs. There's some things that you're going to have to modify if your screen reader doesn't modify out of the box.
So I guess you can talk to that. Are you going to be talking about that?
No, but I could.
Might be, if you have time to.
There's like hours and hours.
I know, but if you could yeah. Something, that might be helpful.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions?
Lewis, did I answer your question about narrator as well?
No. Okay, I was unclear. Again, every time it crashes, it says, you know, you send a message, you're not. All the buttons were cancel or end programs. It doesn't tell you where your highlighted is. You have to guess. If you hit around tab a few times, you guess and it does something bizarre. It only reaches the whole page. It won't tell you which.
Is that a narrator button?
Is it a narrator? Or are you talking about
narrator? Yes, because it's after JAWS crashes.
So after JAWS crashes, the narrator doesn't tell you where you are?
No, it does not. It won't tell you what button is highlighted. Like, you know, you want to send a report to Microsoft. Right. Or so, okay. I don't actually know that
there's a lot of factors that would control that. So I don't know. We can look at that. But I mean, the design is that you can hit WinKey+U, launch narrator, and it should be able to tell you where you are. I mean,
it won't tell you the highlighted button.
Yeah, what he's saying is there's a current bug which we'd like to make sure it doesn't exist in Vista, which is to say that when a program crashes like JAWS, or Lewis, have you made it with when Internet Explorer crashes, which sometimes happens and you have the same dialog that pops up?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's...
Well, of course, nothing's going to crash now. It's all perfect. Yeah, we fixed all that.
So what it does now, is in a lot of cases, Lewis, if you alt-tab real quick...
You get your focus back.
Yeah, and then it'll read the description and then it'll tell you what button you're on.
It does not do that now.
So I'm saying in Vista, that's what it does currently.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's good feedback, and if that happens, you know, in Vista, then we definitely like to look at that. It's just a bug, so okay. It's certainly not the design.
But you got to get through the description first to be able to hear what button it doesn't. And sometimes in JAWS, it'll pick what button first.
Okay.
And then read.
But if JAWS is gone, you're
very exactly.
You're,
it's just different.
Yeah. Okay.
Great. Other questions?
Question.
Jason.
Question about installation. Has there been any effort made to make the XP install accessible? Now, I obviously have the sound driver running to make that work.
The XP installation? Okay, good. Yes, we have done some work there. The thing that's still giving us difficulty there are some of the security issues. But in general, one of the reasons we redesigned, so if you're in XP, there's a couple of scenarios. I'll quickly cover one. If you're in XP and you run the upgrade to Windows Vista, the nice thing about this is we've redesigned it so that effectively all the prompting happens on XP before the installation starts. So your screen reader should still be running, or it will be still running. So you can fill in all the information and then click go, and then it goes through the rest of it unattended, does the setup, and then reboots into Vista. Now, I mean,
not everybody yet, but most products.
Yeah. Right, but I mean, the machine will boot into Vista in the end and then be sitting there, but the question is, does your AT, do you have the same version of the product that runs on XP and Vista, and therefore it's there running? So there's a lot of details of combinations of products, but worst case, you now know you can press WinKey+U, log in, you know, and then or log in and then, you know, reinstall your app if you have to. So we're pretty confident that the installation experience is significantly better. Now, the case where you're going straight from a CD and you have a formatted drive, I don't think we've really solved that problem yet because we still don't have, we've been unable, and we spent quite a bit of time talking to it's Windows PE is the operating system that's running that. Finding a way to have sound drivers loaded and running before the, you know, the software's installed is not a problem we've solved yet. So, but the upgrade experience we think is significantly better. Yeah.
Okay. So you've done something to upgrade, but not to native, not to just install from scratch.
Right. And in most cases, the AT vendors have told us that they recommend you do an unattended install, and then you run their self-voicing install. So I think there's the solution there.
Okay. Next. Who's that back there?
Your name?
What? No, I need your name.
Oh, Wayne.
Go ahead, Wayne.
You don't have to.
Joel will talk about that.
Yeah.
Next question. Anybody else?
Who? Jeff Johnson.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, Jeff.
Okay, my question is, you comment on the support for accessibility and virtualization. Right now, I'm having a bear of time working on getting an accessibility solution to operate inside, for example, a product like VMware. And as I'm an IT professional, our operations are moving inevitably in the direction of virtualization, and as such, I'm at the moment somewhat limited in the breadth of my role.
Good night, everybody.
No, I'll be honest, I don't actually know. I really don't know how that product is doing today on the platform. So,
It's a valid concern. It is a very valid concern.
Certainly is. I don't have the latest on that. I do know they were having a hard time, so I'll just take note of that follow-up. What was your name again, Jeff?
My name is Jeff Dodson.
Great.
Louis Morgan, a remote desk.
Louis.
Is it going to be necessary for the vendors to keep putting stuff on a remote computer, their own video drivers?
And you mean
for Citrix and for remote desktop, it's quite often necessary for JAWS to put its drivers on the remote computer, and companies close that.
Yes, and in general, the AT vendors, we talked through several different approaches in the last 3 years. In general, in the end, the AT vendors were more inclined to stay with their current approach than any of the alternatives.
What's that? Than to try to come up with another.
Yeah, then we had at least two other approaches that we actually thought might have merit, and in general, the vendors thought that those still had problems, and that they understood the problems of the current model, and they preferred to stick with that. We haven't given up on that, but in general, we didn't get enough interest to actually go pursue those other ideas, so it's been tabled. Agreed, but the vendor said that in general, they liked that model better than the alternatives that we've presented. There is actually a new mechanism available in Vista today with terminal services that allows them to intercept graphics primitives going across to the remote machine. But in general, I don't believe any of them are using it. And that's why I say it's really some of it is a vendor choice at this point. They've not decided to use one of the new techniques that we have available. So if they really need to, they actually do have the ability to start changing some of that and moving away. I don't know offhand if it's 100% of what they have, but I know there's a large number of primitives that they can actually get remotely today, which is new.
And it may be 18 months out from R&D because they're doing everything they can now to be ready for release. So.
Yeah, heard the list earlier. That was I had five items or six items, and those are all major issues. And so it's a dramatic shift in the platform. In general for Microsoft, and that's the other reason we're pretty excited that they're actually up and running today. There are a lot of specific scenarios that we're still working through, and that's what we'll spend the next 2 months really ironing out. Does that help?
Yes.
I can take one more question. If we don't have any more questions.
David Chan.
Who?
David Chan.
Chan.
I just signed up to the beta.
He wants to know how to be
the public beta closed Friday for Vista. Maybe it'll reopen for RC1, but I believe Friday afternoon was like the last time. Yeah, it was like the last day was June 30th to download.
Okay.
Office beta is still available.
Well, and that's probably, I thought it was this week for some reason. So, and that's probably because the bits are so old.
They hit 2.5 mil and shut it down.
Okay. So, let me work with Curtis and we'll actually get something out on that to let you know how to sign up and when and all of that.
Yeah, because this stuff moves really fast, and if you're not already in the pipeline, it's very hard to start from the beginning.
But yep. RC1 should be out, still September, possibly, knock on wood.
Yeah, so there's going to be one.
Yeah, our dates are the same.
Yeah.
Our dates have not changed.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, I did. The reason I'm demonstrating something that was only about a week and a half old or a week old is that there are significant improvements since beta 2. So the other The other issue is, even if you get the beta 2 build today, you would be reporting a lot of issues that have already been found. So in some respects, it would be, you know, maybe less of a good use of your time. But we'll definitely get you information on the next release.
And I already tried hitting him up to the latest build. He wouldn't give it to me, so, you know.
I will. That's right. Well, I really appreciate the time, and feel free to let me know if you have any other questions. I'll be here the rest of the day. So thank you very much.